Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software helping small business owners thrive. Try it free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/HamNation. By Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at RocketMortgage.com/HamNation. And by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 360 for July 25th, 2018, live from AirVenture. Good evening. Welcome to another exciting episode of Ham Nation. Bob is on the road again. He's been out getting some great footage that I know we're going to be seeing here in the near future. But this week, you're stuck with us again. I'm George, W5JDX, and with me... immediately to my south, we've got Don Wilbanks. Hi, Don.
Hey, what's going on, George? We've got some we got some big news. First off, I can officially announce that the 2018 Young Ham of the Year Award recipient has been named, but I cannot tell you who it is yet. Oh, but that info is coming, and we hope to have that person on the show next week. I'm going to try to put that together. And also, the announcement that we've kind of all been waiting for, Dr. Tamitha Scove's vanity call sign came in. It was issued a few days ago. It is Whiskey X-Ray 6 Sierra Whiskey Whiskey. So Weather 6 Space Weather Woman. That's her call sign. Now all we have to do is get her a radio and get her on the air, George.
Cool. I did have one announcement here. Ted Randall sent me a message shortly before the show here. Wanted to remind everyone that the Middle Tennessee Ham Quest will be going on this Saturday in Lebanon, Tennessee. That's for the Nashville area. It's at the Lebanon Wilson County Fairgrounds right off of I-40 for easy access. And they'll be broadcasting live on WTWW. So stop by and see them. You can Google Ham Quest, find more info there, or you can go to the website, midtnhamquest.com. So drop by and say hello to Ted there. He invited me to come up, but I won't be able to make it because I'm going on vacation next week, and it won't be north of here. It'll be sort of southwest of here. Anyway, speaking of to the west, he's to the east right here in this photo, but here's our friend Gordo.
Well, speaking of ham fests out here in the West, this past weekend, I was up in Reno, Nevada for the Sierra Nevada Amateur Radio Society's Nevada State Amateur Radio Convention. Let me tell you, those folks really know how to pull off a great convention. And we've got some great things coming tonight. We're going to be talking about kicking off and what you do with all your radio gear now that you're no longer around. Next week, we're going to be talking about working the FM satellites. But, oh, yeah, we're going to talk about sideband and digital with all of the other satellites, because on September 26th, we've got Joe Speier, who is the AMSAT president. Joe and his wife, Carolyn, will be here in the shack, and we're going to have a great time there. And week after next, we talk about the FCC commercial license. But the question is, this came from the Reno Hamfest. We'll announce it at the end of my second segment, but who knows what type of valve or tube or... can anybody identify what this is? In the chat room, let's see who's first to figure out this little Reno device that we snagged in Reno, Nevada. George, back to you.
Cool, Gordo. And can I get an ice cream sandwich to go with that?
Well, you know, Don thought I looked like the good humor man, and we're always in good humor.
Well, that's great. Speaking of good humor, we've got two more guys that are up in the north right now. I don't even know if they can hear us for all the interference up there. It's Ray Novak and Dan Van Evenhoven. Oh, I see y'all had to go indoors, huh? Hi, guys.
Well, it started raining here, so electronics and laptops do not like water too well.
Oh, no. So tell us where you are.
Well, Dan and I are at the Oshkosh Air Show, or the EA Air Venture. And this year, I'm on vacation up here doing the Warbird Special Event Station, Whiskey 9 Whiskey.
And so, what has been going on there? I tried to hear you on the air. I could hear a couple of people calling you, but I never got to hear you. So I'm guessing the band conditions are maybe not optimal this week. We'll hear from Dr. Scove later in the show. But how's it been going so far?
It's been pretty rough. We're supposed to be on 10, 15, 20, and 40. And 10 and 15 are dead, and the antenna system's a little bit compromised with where they've got me located. But I'm not going to argue because I'm, what, Dan, 200 feet away from Warbird Tower?
Yeah, 200 feet away.
Oh, from wow.
Warbird. And as I was telling a couple of people that I was working today, behind me were P-51 Mustangs parking lot. Directly to the right of us, we can look at a T-28 trainer. And just a little bit to the left of that is the T-34 line. So, I mean, there's a lot of gorgeous warbirds out here.
Wow. So, Dan, you go here every year. How many years have you been going to the...
I've been volunteering for 29 years. This is my 29th year volunteering. And about my 35th or 36th, somewhere in there, convention that I've been to.
He's being humble. It says 29 years on the badge right here and says chairman. Chairman. You got to do a lot of work to become a volunteer chairman.
Yeah, I've been here for almost 2 weeks already.
So you don't have to crank the planes anymore. You don't have to get out there and spin the propellers.
No, that ain't my job anymore, no.
Okay, cool.
Nope. I sent Victor some pictures, give an idea, perspective of how big this thing is. Yeah, that's a pretty good rendition of how big this thing is. I actually took that one earlier this week. 3.5 miles long by 2.5 miles wide.
That's one of the monuments as you come in through the front gates right there.
Yeah, you know you're at, that's the W9ZL Special Event Station, the other one. From the Warbirds. I've got some. Here's the Warbirds.
There's Josh in that photo. He's been hoarded up over the corner over here saying, nuh-uh, I don't want to be part of this Ham Nation stuff.
Oh.
And this is.
That's the ARL booth, that last picture you just had up there for a second. This is still Whiskey 9 Whiskey. And
we have all kinds of guest operators come in, work a couple of queues. I can't remember the guy that spent the most time in the booth. He says, my name's Beetle Bailey, and I can't remember his call sign to save him. And then the next one is the ARRL booth. They're here in force. And Dan, you started sharing some of the numbers with them.
Yep, I started sharing some of the numbers with them. And they were absolutely amazed at the crossover. I was talking to Bob Interbitz, and he wasn't quite sure what they might do, but is very surprised at the amount of ham radio operators that are also pilots.
How many planes do we have this year?
I think right now the count is right around 10,000 and growing.
What? Oh, wow.
And when he talks about growing, there are two main runways here. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they split the two runways into four runways each. They'll have a dot at the beginning of the runway, one at the middle, and they will tell you either go to the red dot or the yellow dot to land short or land long, land left or right. It's incredible the amount of traffic that they run through here.
This for 1 week is the busiest airport by far. Typically, three aircraft movements per minute.
Wow.
Wow.
Which basically means a takeoff or a landing of that type, three a minute. Atlanta Hartsfield doesn't even come close.
But it's been, wow. We're using a radio waves hex beam, and that by far is the tallest structure in the Warburg area. And when people come by the ICOM aviation booth, they tell them that there's ham radio, and they go, oh yeah, we saw that thing that looked like what you dry your clothes on. And if you guys are interested, you can go to QRZ.com and look up Whiskey 9 Whiskey. And I'm updating the page with photos each day that we take. And you can see exactly what's going on with the special event station.
Cool. So, Ray, is this your first air venture, or how many have you been to?
I've probably been to a total of about 18 of them over the years. Most of them have been working in the booth with the aviation product. But last year, Cindy and I decided to come up here for vacation. We had a blast. I ran into some friends of mine here at the Warbirds. And we used to do a special event station and leave a couple of radios for them to use. And I'm like, hey, I want to come again next year. I will run the special event station if you guys will get me in a good spot. So they did that. What we're running is a 7851 on 20. We've got a 7610 on 15, a 7300 on 10 meters, and then a 9100 on VHF and UHF.
Wow. Well, it sounds like y'all are having a big time up there. Is there anything else you can tell us about the event, or maybe where we should look for you on the air?
With the way propagation's been, we've been mainly on 20 meters, roughly around 14.250, plus or minus if there's other stations. Most of the queues have been between 11 and 4.
Okay. Well, we will try to catch you on the air yet before the thing is out there. I don't know. I'll have to watch and see what Dr. Scove says here in a few minutes. Might get a little break in there. I don't know, but I'll have to raise my hex beam up and try to talk to your hex beam.
All right. Sounds good. And there's Josh right in the back there in the shot.
Yeah, he was over by the operating the microwave there. That's probably a good thing to operate about this time of the day, I think. All right, guys, we appreciate y'all bringing us a little glimpse at Air Venture there. We had a great time before the rain ran you in there, and we were getting to see some of the actual planes in the air there. So I know
you can actually go to the Air Venture website. And they do stream the air show live on their website. And it is really cool for those people that have never seen an air show at this extent. It's the largest air show in the world. And and again, by far. Like I say, you can they've got several cameras set up. You can view the webcams and see the grounds. And then they also have the one that's live of the air show itself that happens every day. And you'll see stuff here that you will see nowhere else.
And it's an interesting experience camping at this event, George. We had a wake-up call a little bit before 7 o'clock the other morning, Monday morning. It was a B-1 bomber coming in low and loud. They did two flybys and then...
Wow. Yeah, all you need is an air raid siren there to go with action like that.
That usually goes off when they're clearing the Warburg field so they can get all the planes lined up. I think The big warbird show will have over 300 warbirds in the air at one time. Last year, they had two B-29s flying, and that was the first time they've had two in the air simultaneously in over 50 years.
Wow.
Wow. Well, Dan, that link you were telling us about earlier, where you can go watch the live webcams, how can we find that?
Just go to that media page that I just saw pop up there. It's on the media page. They show the three different cameras that you can view, either from Warbirds, Vintage, or Ultralights. And then,
yeah, what website?
From there, you actually see where it says live show.
Yeah, what website?
On the live show media, and away you go. I looked earlier today, and the air show today had 4,000-something views at the time that I was seeing it.
And what is the URL?
I don't have the URL off the top of my head. I can quick send it to Victor.
EAA.org.
Okay, that's what I was looking for, EAA.org. That's simple enough. All right, guys. Well, thank y'all.
That'll get you to the main AirVenture site, and then you can go from there. There's so much to see on that EA website.
And, George, like I was saying, I'm running the special event station outside underneath the awning, and in the afternoon, the sun's behind us, so we can look underneath out from underneath the awning and watch the air show. And there's a couple of times when I've gone, oh my gosh, you should be seeing this, not realizing that my foot's on the push to talk as I was working at you.
Wow. Well, you've got any questions for them, Gordo?
No, just be safe and duck if they're too low, and have a great time, both of you.
Yeah, what about you, Don?
I like that.
I don't have any questions, but I'm jealous as I can be, because AirVenture is what is a bucket list item for me. AirVenture and also the Reno Air Races, because I came this close to getting my private pilot's license, and I grew up around Tinker Air Force Base in Oklahoma City. And just have always loved aircraft, and so that's definitely a bucket list thing for me. So, guys, have fun, and we'll be living vicariously through you guys.
Yeah, I've got my camper out in Camp Scholler, and I'm also running HF from there with a little portable setup. It's pretty cool.
Well, I hope your antenna's disconnected, because I'm seeing lightning in the distance, so they're probably shutting down the air show now.
Yeah, well, I pushed my antenna down; it's telescoping.
Yeah. All right, guys. Y'all have a great time up there, and we'll look forward. I imagine Dan will have a few pictures for us coming up in the next episode or so here. If you get time, yep. Dan, snap a few for us. All right. 7-3, guys.
All right. See you guys.
Well,
later.
We get
7-3.
73. Well, we've got a lot more to go here, but first, Don, come in and help us pay a few bills.
I would love to do that. This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by FreshBooks. You can streamline your business operation with FreshBooks. It's an easy-to-use cloud accounting software built specifically for you, the small business owner. Quickly access accounting reports in the FreshBooks dashboard. Send professional-looking invoices in seconds. Keep tabs on your business no matter where you are with the FreshBooks mobile app for Android and iOS. FreshBooks automatically connects to your bank account and updates expenses daily. Import expenses in bulk or take a picture of a receipt, upload it, and let FreshBooks do the rest. You can even manage team member rates and add team members as business partner, basic employee, or contractor, depending on which permissions you want to grant each team member. You can create proposals in rich text content and images, and request your client's e-signature as they accept proposals. And under the other income thing, you can use the revenue streams graph to show exactly where your invoice and non-invoice revenue, such as online sales and ads, is coming from, so you can accurately plan for growth and make the informed decision about how to diversify. And with FreshBooks, there's no need to chase clients for payment. Accept online payments directly from your invoice and get paid an average of 2 times faster. You can see sent, viewed, and paid and overdue invoices and easily import clients from a CSV file with just a few clicks. You can bill for time by client and by specified project. Send invoices, estimates, proposals in multiple languages, and the new Microsoft Outlook payments integration into FreshBooks allows users to view and pay FreshBooks invoices regardless of what device they view it from. If your credit card is registered with Outlook Payments, you can pay in one click. Join the 24 million people who have used FreshBooks to painlessly send invoices, track time and capture expenses, and get back to doing what you love. Try FreshBooks free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/HamNation and enter HamNation in the How Did You Hear About It section. That's FreshBooks.com/HamNation. And FreshBooks, we thank you for your support. Somebody else we thank on a weekly basis for supporting us is Ted Randall over at WTWW Shortwave. You can listen to us right now on Shortwave, 5085, 100,000 watts, and 15.810. And if you would like to send them a signal report or just send them a little bit of email, tell them what you like about the station, email some ham radio-related stuff, you can do that at email at wtww.us, that website again or email address. Email at wtww.us. They're good friends of us here at Ham Nation and big supporters of Amateur Radio Newsline, which you can hear right there on WTWW. Gordo, what's going on with you over there, my friend?
Well, all is well. And again, we were at Boomtown Reno, and we want to know from the chat room who can identify this particular little valve that we found there at the Reno Ham Fest. And many of you have probably over the last year received this postcard. Well, it's bigger than a postcard. It says, Wanted Ham Radio, Tubes, Vintage Audio. And they were also based in Reno. And, you know, we're all not going to be here forever. And there's nothing worse than getting out of this world, but leaving all your ham radio gear at home and your XYL or kids have no idea what to do with it. And a few hams may pick a couple of good items and pay a penny on the dollar for what you paid for it. Well, I found an organization that I explored, and I've heard some great reports. So let's take a look and listen on www.hamandhifi.com and see what they have for old gear that they're willing to pay hard cash for. So, Victor, if we'll go with that first short shot.
My wife and I moved back from Virginia in 2014, and that's when we opened up the shop, Hammond Hi-Fi. At that point, I had been doing it more or less full-time for about 2 years.
Now, that was Ethan Brizendine, KG7LOV, and with him coming up is Don Sherman, W7SSB, that helped also put together the Ham Fest. But we're doing a little tour of this great facility.
And so we opened this shop, took the plunge. We found Don, thankfully, to help us out with all the testing. And from there, we've been advertising directly to hams. Anyone who has an active general, advanced, or extra class ticket gets a postcard from us at some point or another saying, wanted, we buy equipment. And hopefully we can match up with the guys with the extra stuff and are looking to sell it.
And hold on to that shot, Victor.
The postcards is probably our main source of advertising. It's direct mail. We've experimented with ads in QST and electric radio and various publications, but you can't count on every guy reading that publication or taking the time to read your ad, whereas with the postcards, the guys are going to get it in their hand and they're guaranteed to see it, at least for a split second. So what we do with the postcards is we'll pick one geographical area. Again, send everyone with a general, advanced, or extra class ticket a postcard, and we'll give it a few weeks, maybe a month or so, generate a certain amount of response, and then make a trip down and visit everyone who responded to the ad. So now we're in the warehouse, and we've got about 2,000 square feet here of storage. This is all the stuff that's listed online. So, you know, by the nature of what we do, we don't get a whole lot of newer gear. But if you're looking for older gear, Kenwood, TS-440s, Yaesu FT-101s, Collins, Drake, Swan, that sort of thing, we can certainly help you out. unique. We don't have any sort of catalog. The best way to see what we have for sale is to go to our website, hamandhifi.com, hamandhifi.com. From there, you'll see a big eBay logo with a link on it. If you click that link, it'll take you to our eBay store. And from there, everything's cataloged and sectioned off by type. So you have amplifiers, transceivers, parts, manuals, and so forth. And check it out, because we have new stuff in all the time. It's always changing, and you never know what you're going to find.
And you worry, maybe I'm going to buy a Ham's really kludge piece of gear. Well, they've got an answer to that.
Yeah, we try to test things as thoroughly as we can. Sometimes if we come across some pieces that have been in the garage for, you know, decades, the power cord's frayed, those type of things we'll sell as is, untested. But for the most part, everything gets tested before it goes up on eBay. The one thing I would point out is that we have a 99.7% positive feedback rate on eBay with over 13,000 transactions. And so if there is a problem, rest assured it's going to be taken care of. We're more than happy to get Don on the phone with you, see if we can troubleshoot it. More often than not, we can. If we have to do a return, we're more than happy to do that. For instance, we just a Central Electronics 600L amplifier we just took back. We don't know what the problem is, but Don's working on it right now. We're more than happy to take that back. Pay for return shipping and issue a refund.
Wow, and that's Don, W7SSB as in single sideband.
And so what we have here is a lot of gear that we're looking to give away for free. When we go out and do a large estate cleanup, a lot of times we come across stuff, accumulations of stuff that may not have a whole lot of monetary value, but it's still useful stuff that guys can get use out of for their own projects or repairs.
And twice a year, they have sort of a freebie get-together where people come in and pick up all of this extra gear at no charge up there in Reno. That's a very good deal.
Yeah, so this machine here is called the Instapak.
And this is a multi-$1,000 packaging machine to make sure the gear gets there nice and safe.
This is a machine that allows us to use a liquid foam around each item. It hardens up. And with this, we can ship the most fragile items all the way up to a heavy receiver like an R390 or Super Pro. And we can ship it anywhere in the world, and we know that it's not going to get damaged. We've been using it for about 2 years now. Haven't had a single instance of damage. You know, one misconception I think that we get is a lot of people think we buy most of our equipment or all of our equipment from Silent Key Estates, and it's actually the opposite. We do deal with, I would say it's about 80-20 split, 80% active or living hams, whether they're active or not, of guys who are just thinning out the collection. Maybe they're moving to a community with an HOA that prohibits antennas.
So it's important that all of us living as well as we are mark down what the suggested selling price may be if it's just sold to any ham, but realize that if it's going to be purchased as a complete system, it'll be a little bit below that, but still, for your YL that survives, it's still going to be a very good deal that they handle everything. And they do handle everything.
Our buying service, we try to base it really around convenience for people, whether it's taking up the whole collection or whatever we can make it as easy as possible for folks. So we definitely don't want to burden people making a list of equipment down to the last coax switch. We do need those indications of what may be the more valuable pieces. We can kind of establish some idea of what we'd be able to give them for at least those pieces. A couple snapshots is a good place to start. With that, we can ask any questions we may have on specific pieces of equipment. Example, Collins. You know, Collins is so driven by serial number and production runs. So we can go in and find out if that piece is worth $500 or $1,500.
So go around your ham shack, as suggested by Ethan, and take photos. Photos just tell a million words about the gear.
If we're doing a what we call a buying trip, where we have postcards sent out, I usually make those trips myself, along with an employer, a friend who's willing to lend a hand. A lot of these times, for instance, our trip to Southern California, we have about 60 stops we're going to be making and buying equipment from. About half of those are done deals where we have a definitive list of what they have. We've agreed on a price already. And so those are relatively simple. But when it comes to collections where maybe we don't have that complete list yet, but we don't know what all is exactly there, I try to make those trips down myself so I can evaluate it and do the pricing myself.
And they don't cherry pick.
Yeah,
they
when we
take
found
it
folks
all.
Who are interested in selling their equipment as a lot and looking for someone to take it all, there's really 5 points that I think make us ideal to deal with. The first, as we talked about, is we come to you. So, you know, we've gone as far as Florida to pick up equipment, Texas, Minneapolis, Philadelphia, and all these instances, we were out doing the heavy lifting, you know, amplifiers, you name it. And so the folks have an outlet for their stuff, and they don't need to do any heavy lifting. Point two, as we talked about, is we take everything. So if you're one of these people and you have a garage full of stuff and you want it cleaned out, it's going to be cleaned out. We'll even sweep the floor.
Wow.
Our point number three is that nothing goes to waste. So you can rest assured that all these things you've been collecting for the last few decades, they're going to be used by somebody somewhere at some point in time, even if we have to give them away. Number four is, you know, we try to pay fair wholesale prices. Obviously, we're going to be buying the stuff below market value. I think most people understand that. But our goal is to come up with a deal that's fair to both of us as we pay cash on the spot. And so when we go and buy something, the deal is done. You have payment. You don't have to wait for a check to clear. And on top of that, once it's gone, anything that may be wrong with any item, it's our problem now, not your problem.
And they have tubes, and every tube gets checked. They have three different kinds of tube checkers, including a good old hitch up.
The website is the place to go to, and we do sell on eBay. So rather than go through eBay and try to navigate that menu of finding our listings, the easiest thing to do is go to our website, www.hamandhifi.com. Right on our homepage, there's a big eBay logo with a link to our eBay store. If you click that link, everything's there and cataloged, categorized by equipment type, and it's pretty easy to navigate. And of course, if you have any questions, you can ask us through our own website or through eBay. More than happy to help. We have four full-time employees here at the shop. Derek is kind of the number two when it comes to the buying trips. He's been working with us for about 3 years, so he's very knowledgeable about you know, what sort of power plug may go with this item. We want to make sure we get all the accessories. He knows what to look for as manuals and whatever knickknacks may come along with those items and how to handle them and disconnect them properly. Well, my name is Ethan. I'm the owner of Hammond Hi-Fi. Call sign is KG7LOV.
And one more shot, if you would, Victor. And Ethan, we thank you. And you can come on back here now, Victor. We thank you for giving us the tour. And, of course, the mystery tube, well, we added this part to it. This really wasn't part of it. The mystery tube was found at a restaurant at the Ham Convention site. It was the steakhouse restaurant. And, of course, it's oil and vinegar. It's not a tube. So that's my story. So, George, back to you. And I gave this group a good review. And if someone should get a postcard that looks like this, wanted ham radio tubes and vintage audio, including stereos and things like that, if you want them to come in and take everything or much of the excess stuff that we all have sorted in drawers and not even sorted in drawers, they're going to give you a fair price for it in cash. George?
Well, Gordo, that looks like a great venture there. I'm going to have to go look up their website and see what kind of old gear they got on there for sale, because there's likely something there I'd like to have, as most of us hams really like to collect old gear. And great service there, particularly for those trying to liquidate or family members that have a lot of gear, you know, because we do estate sales and you see a lot of estate gear at a ham fest, but it sounds like these guys here could handle it all in one stop, Gordo.
And you're right. And George, this is a business. Yes, they do try and make a profit, but believe me, they don't stick it to any XYL or any ham, because they do all the work and they come in and take it all away. And as they said, they'll even clean the garage with a good old broom after they're finished. George?
Well, that's great to know, Gordo. Great resource there. Don has got some more information for us, and then we're going to catch up on the news.
Yes, we are. We're going to hear from Dr. T with the space weather forecast, Whiskey X-Ray 6. Sierra Whiskey Whiskey is her call. But first, I want to tell you about Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. You're going to have to buy a home probably at some point in your life. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans makes it easier. Because of rising interest rates, there's a lot of unpredictability when it comes to buying a home. These days, or any day, really, it's can cause a lot of anxiety. And that's why Quicken Loans decided to do something about it with Rocket Mortgage. They're calling it the power buying process. And it's pretty simple, really. Quicken Loans will verify your income, assets, and credit in less than 24 hours to give you a verified approval. Now, you know what that means? A verified approval, it means it gives you the strength of a cash buyer. Once you're verified, you qualify for their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, they will lock up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. And the best part is, if rates go up, your rate stays the same. But if rates go down, your rate also drops. Either way, you win. It's the kind of thinking you would expect from America's largest mortgage lender. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/hamnation. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply. Based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records, equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org number 3030. That's rocketmortgage.com/hamnation. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of Ham Nation. Now, let's get into the news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline report number 2125, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, July 25th, 2018. We have a special extended report on WRTC 2018 in this week's Amateur Radio Newsline that's too long to cover here in the headlines, so you can hear that in the full audio edition of this week's report. And now that WRTC 2018 is history, you might think that the amateur radio championship season is over. Well, think again. One of the next big competitions will take place in Korea.
Just in case you can't get enough of the big contest scene, hams are now preparing for the action to shift to Korea, where the country's natural landscape will share the spotlight with some of the hobby's best in fox hunting. The 19th World Amateur Radio Direction Finding Championships will be hosted by the Korean Amateur Radio League, not far from another prominent contest venue, the 2018 Winter Olympics location in Pyeongchang. The championship search for low-power transmitters will be held September 2nd through to the 8th. According to the latest bulletin from the Korean Radio League, 418 amateurs representing 25 countries have committed to participate so far. The panel of jurors consists of hams from Belgium, Sweden, Canada, Ukraine, and Japan. The 18th World ARDF Championships were held in Bulgaria in 2016. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jason Daniels, VK2LAW.
Registration for Scouting's big on-air happening, Jamboree on the Air, is now open.
Jamboree on the Air and Jamboree on the Internet is just a short 3 months away now. Registration has been opened and has been greatly simplified. You can find the registration page with our shortcut of joda2018.k2bsa.net or by searching the jodajody.info site. Stations can register events with Boy Scout or Girl Scout units. You can even edit your event information after you have registered, so be sure to include a current email address and you'll receive a link to your registration for updating. Another event that is just 12 months away is World Jamboree. This is a quadrennial event that is held in locations all over the scouting world every 4 years. In 2019, it will be hosted in North America at the Summit Bechtel Reserve in West Virginia. Our call sign for this event will be NA1WJ. You'll be hearing more information about this event as it nears. For now, check out our landing page for it at NA1WJ.net. For more information on JODA or radio scouting, or to sign up for our JODA newsletter, please visit our website at k2bsa.net. For Amateur Radio Newsline and the K2BSA Amateur Radio Association, this is Bill Stearns, NE4RD.
The actor Bruce Willis might be the last person you'd expect to be talking into an HT, but it happened on screen 30 years ago this year, and his co-star, it turns out, was a Kenwood model that is now vintage.
As the blockbuster action thriller Die Hard marks the 30th anniversary of its theatrical release in the U.S., there are still plenty of people who believe that Bruce Willis was the movie's star. His portrayal of New York City cop John McClane came into sharpest focus during a dramatic hostage rescue scene in Los Angeles. Everyone recognizes Bruce Willis, of course, a tough guy who takes no prisoners, even in the face of those who do. But his co-star? Trivia buffs might offer the name of Bonnie Bedelia, who plays his wife, or identify Alan Rickman as the evil Hans Gruber. But guess again. Amateur radio operators know better. In the July 2018 issue of the ARRL's magazine QST, it's revealed that a Kenwood HT, the model TH31BT to be exact, was Bruce Willis's real co-star. This was the radio that John McClane managed to grab from one of the hostage takers and later used to spy on the captor's conversations. Hams aren't surprised by all this revelation. Why should they be? Admiration for radio's potentials, like the movie, dies hard. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Neil Rapp, WB9VPG.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Jason Daniels, VK2LAW, Bill Stearns, NE4RD, Neil Rapp, WB9VPG, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, 73, yippee-ki-yay, and we'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove.
A massive coronal hole has rotated into the Earth's strike zone, and it's sending us some fast wind now. Will it be enough to bring us aurora? Those stories and more in the news this week. Even though the sun is spotless this week, it's sure staying busy. We have this massive coronal hole that has rotated into the Earth's strike zone. It has been sending us some fast wind over the past day or so, and it's bumped us up to active conditions. Now, even though it hasn't reached storm levels yet, this fast wind has brought us aurora. We've gotten it down to mid-latitudes. There have been several reports, both in Europe as well as in the Western Hemisphere, of some decent aurora, despite the fact that we have a full moon. On top of that, we've had a couple mini solar storms being launched. They're a little bit stealthy. Don't know if they're going to be affecting Earth over the next couple days, but they could impact and intensify this fast wind that's hitting now. On top of that, we have this bright region. We were sure hoping that it was going to have a bigger impact than it has on the solar flux. It is waning now, and it is dropping our solar flux even more. We've been sitting at kind of a low level for radio propagation, and it looks like that's going to continue easily over the next week and may even get worse on the day side as this region rotates out of Earth view. Switching to our M-flare threat meter, you can see with a spotless sun, we're going to have a flatlined X-ray flux, and that's what you see here. And by proxy, the solar flux is also very low. Radio propagation is at poor propagation conditions right now, and it will continue to be that way easily for the next week. And as if things couldn't get worse, you could see kind of things beginning to tank even a little bit more starting around the 22nd. That's because that bright region on the Earth-facing disk is dimming even further. And here in the next couple days, it's going to rotate off of the sun's west limb, and things might actually get even worse if that's imaginable. The nice thing, however, is that we do have a new region that is rotating onto the Earth-facing disk here in about 4 to 5 days, and it might boost the propagation and the solar flux just a little bit. Switching to our solar storm conditions, you can see over the past week, we've been hovering between quiet and unsettled conditions. We've been hit by a couple pockets of fast solar wind right around the 20th and the 21st. It wasn't enough to bump us to storm levels, but it was enough to bring us some aurora at high latitudes especially, and some photographers got some pretty good shots. After that, though, things quieted down for a couple days, and now we've gotten hit by that big fast stream from that massive coronal hole pole that's rotated into the Earth's strike zone. It's already popped us to active conditions several times over the past day and brought us some decent aurora to several places, even fighting that full or near full moon that we've got right now. And these conditions could continue easily over the next 24 hours before we kind of get back to unsettled conditions, and then things should be expected to quiet down as we get close to the weekend. So what else does the sun have in store for us this week? Well, this is Stereo A. It's our backside monitor. You can see here's Earth, here's the sun, and here's Stereo A staring at the sun from behind. And when you look at Stereo's view of the sun, it looks almost as boring as the view from Earth. This is a solar minimum, folks. This is kind of what the sun looks like. Luckily, we do have one bright region in Stereo's view. This is the region that's going to be rotating into Earth view here in the next week, which is going to give amateur radio operators something to smile about when it boosts the solar flux just a little bit. We also have a tiny coronal hole that's going to be also rotating Earth side. This coronal hole might bring us a small pocket of fast wind, which can give aurora photographers another chance in a few weeks to catch a mini solar storm. And it also might help GPS reception at low latitudes because it helps stable these tiny little storms, help stabilize the upper atmosphere. The one other nice thing is it looks like there's a hint of another region that will be rotating into Stereo's view here in the next few days. So that's good news again for amateur radio operators because it means maybe in a couple weeks we could bump back up to marginal propagation. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are in the middle of that fast wind from that massive coronal hole that's rotated into the Earth's strike zone, and we are getting active aurora even down at mid-latitudes. We've seen some reports already. So at high latitudes, NOAA is expecting minor storm conditions with about a 45% chance of a major storm. Now at mid-latitudes, we're only expecting active conditions with about a 15% chance of a minor storm, and this is over the next 24 hours. The conditions will then slowly begin to wane after that, with things getting a lot more quiet as we get to the weekend. So your aurora photographers, especially at mid-latitudes, you have a chance to catch some aurora, but it will be fleeting. So stay on your toes. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, everything is still in the green when it comes to solar flares because we still have a spotless sun. We are at solar minimum, folks, and unfortunately that means that the solar flux is horrible. These are some of the lowest numbers we've seen all cycle, and we're going to have to stick with them here easily for the next few days. Radio propagation on Earth's day side is terrible. I know that. Luckily, though, within the next week, we're going to have a region kind of poking its head around the sun's east limb, and that should boost the solar flux just a little bit, but you're going to have to be patient because it's going to be a slow rise. Hopefully, we'll get up to the low edge of marginal propagation conditions, but no promises. Nonetheless, in about 2 weeks, we actually might see these numbers turn back into the yellow. So despite us experiencing solar minimum-like conditions, the sun continues to be a bit active. We have a huge coronal hole that has rotated into the Earth's strike zone, and it's been sending us some fast wind. And despite it not being a super strong storm, it has bumped us up to active conditions and brought aurora sporadically down to mid-latitudes. So you aurora photographers, you should be very happy, but stay on your toes so you can catch these shots easily over the next day or so before things begin to wane. Now, amateur radio operators aren't quite as happy with these minimum light conditions because the solar flux is completely tanked. We're seeing some of the lowest numbers that we have seen this entire cycle, and it's going to continue that way easily over the next week before a new region rotates into Earth view on the sun's east limb, and then that might bring a slow rise in the solar flux to maybe even marginal conditions in about 2 weeks. So keep your fingers crossed, because I know sporadic E is great and auroral propagation is great with these solar storms, but nothing beats some decent solar flux. Now, as far as your GPS operators are concerned, well, as long as you stay away from aurora and maybe even the dawn dust terminators, your reception should look pretty good. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
Awesome stuff from Dr. T, as always. WXCT 6 SWW, as we've mentioned several times. And, George, here's a little interesting tidbit of information that I got from the folks who are reconstituting the Tim Allen show, Last Man Standing. You know, in the set at Tim's radio station, they have all of our QSL cards. They're putting one together for Dr. T. In fact, I believe Amanda is actually working on doing a QSL card for Dr. T, and her card will be on the wall as well. So I think that's just the coolest thing, George.
It's fantastic, Don. I didn't know if they still had our cards or not, or if we were just going to have to throw some more in the hat there. Well, that's great. You know, my partner over at Amateur Logic, Tommy, was out there just so 2-3 weeks ago. And he sat down with our friend John Amadeo there and got a good interview inside the studio, got a lot of details on what's going on, the rebuilding of the set. Great info. It won't be until the next Amateur Logic, which will be around the 15th of this coming month. But trust me, the show is going to be worth tuning into for at least one more season and hopefully beyond that.
And they got some neat new gear in there, too. Tim has upgraded that ham station, so expect to see some new gear there.
That's what I understand. So that's cool. Something to look forward to. And absolutely, coming this fall, not that far away. Well, let's get a message from ICOM real quick. Come back, and I've got a little bit of wrap-up to do on what we talked about last week.
Heard it, worked it, logged it. It's time to get the transceiver that's best suited for your lifestyle. ICOM offers a variety of high-performance and innovative products. See how you can make the most out of contest season with these transceivers. The competitive edge you've been looking for, raise the bar and hear what others cannot with this flagship HF 50 MHz transceiver, the IC7851. Reciprocal mixing dynamic range, crystal clear local oscillator design, spectrum scope, dual receivers, and digital voice recorder. The IC7610 is the SDR every ham wants and just in time for contesting season. This high-performance SDR has the ability to pick out the faintest signals even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. The new ICOM IC7610 is a direct sampling software-defined radio that will change the world's definition of a SDR transceiver. RF direct sampling, 110 RMDR, independent dual receiver, dual digicell. IC7300 is changing the way entry-level HF is designed. This high-performance, innovative HF transceiver with a compact design will far exceed your expectations. RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, and SD memory card slot. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. Register to win some great swag prizes like T-shirts and the new ICOM caps. And while you're there, learn how you can win in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. And for July, that radio is the ICOM ID51A+2 VHF, UHF, dual band, dual watch, D-Star portable, built-in GPS, extended D-Star coverage with terminal mode, access point mode, DV fast data mode. It has a DV and FM repeater search function, and there's an available Android app, the RSMS1A application, that allows you to do more. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation after this and each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. Sign up. Good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America, Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And, you know, last week we talked a little bit about a triplexer. We talked a lot about a triplexer. I had some photos there of all the big cabinets that went to it to combine 3 5-kilowatt AM stations. They weren't really located that far apart on the band. We also mentioned the folded unipole antenna that was in use there. And I've got a couple of photos. Let's just look at the first one here. That is the base of the tower. Traditionally, an AM station, the tower would be sitting on an insulator, which you can see up under that one. But this particular one has been shorted out with copper straps so that the tower is actually grounded. And, you know, usually it's the whole tower that is your AM radiator or the antenna. In this case, it's been grounded. You can see at the bottom there, there's some wires stood off around the outside of the tower that go up the tower and then on up the tower. Those are shorted out at a particular height to create a good AM antenna on a grounded tower. There are some advantages to doing it this way. And that was my question this week for our contest here. Other than the ability to ground the tower and avoid lightning, what is another advantage of a unipole antenna? We had, a lot of people answered that, got some good answers on it, too. I drew one randomly of the people who had the right answers here. And this is not one that that I had really thought about, someone would answer, but Mike Grossi, N2CEC, said, they're useful when you're combining AM and FM on a shared tower. And, Mike, that's correct. By doing this, you can ground the tower. You don't need to worry about putting the FM antenna and transmission line on the tower. On this particular one right here, I'm not sure if it was visible in the photos that we had. You can see the transmission line. There's a big 3-inch transmission line that comes over to the tower from the right-hand side. That transmission line is on insulators there. Back when that site was originally built, the FM was added to the AM tower, and so you couldn't have the FM transmission or the line or the antenna shorted to the tower or else the RF would run back into the building. So when this was built, they had to use standoffs to insulate that transmission line and the antenna as well from the tower. But by using a folded unipole, you can ground that tower, and then you can connect the transmission line for the FM and the antenna itself, mount them right to the tower. So good answer on that, Mike. Had a few other answers. This is the one I was expecting, and most people answered, is that you have a little broader bandwidth when you do that. And you do, and that is one of the big reasons that people will go with a folded unipole antenna. When you do that, well, those wires around the outside are actually the antenna then, and that covers basically more surface area, makes your radiator larger, so broader bandwidth. And, you know, with AMs, wanting 10 kilohertz on either side of the frequency there. That's a concern because a lot of cases, the AM antenna system, particularly on shorter towers, that's an issue. You lose some top end, have some distortion there as well because you don't have enough bandwidth. It's not like ham radio operators here. We want more bandwidth so we can tune to a wider area on the band there. In AM broadcast, you're locked onto a particular frequency. So there, you need that bandwidth so that you can radiate your full 10 kilohertz, although today we're more limited to 7.5, but the spec was originally designed for 10. Another answer we had there was by using a folded unipole, you can have a tower that's less than a quarter wavelength tall. And that is correct. Typically, a dipole for AM broadcast station would be just like a dipole for ham radio. If it's a vertical radiator, you've got a quarter wave tower, and then you've got your ground system around the bottom of it. Well, by doing that folded unipole, that tower does not have to be a full quarter wavelength tall. You can get by with a shorter one by using those skirt wires around there. One other advantage, and I have not witnessed this myself. Some people say it's true. Others have disputed it. But I did have some people say that it's less affected by weeds and ground system problems. Hadn't been my experience, but, you know, there's some people that say it really makes a difference. So another possible benefit there of a folded unipole antenna. So congratulations, Mike, into CEC. We're going to be sending you a DX Engineering tote bag. It's a great heavy-duty canvas bag here that you can use at your next outing. This is not one of those flimsy Walmart shopping bags either, Don. This is an authentic heavy-duty canvas bag, courtesy of our friends at DX Engineering. For next week, I've got another question here and another prize. We're going to go to Gordo's General Class Study Guide and pick out a question that I know is going to be on the next episode of Ham College that I'm shooting tomorrow night at 8 p.m. live.amateurlogic.tv. This week, we're going to be covering some information on Yagi antennas from the general pool. Which of the following would increase the bandwidth of a Yagi antenna? And you might have just got a clue on that one. Is it going to be a larger diameter elements, closer element spacing, loading coils in series with the element, or is it going to be tapered diameter elements? Which of those would increase the bandwidth of a Yagi antenna? If you think you know the answer, send it to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you might win an MFJ 113 giant 24-hour LCD alarm clock. You know, this is one you can look at across the shack. No glasses required. It can be switched for 12 or 24-hour display. Great product from MFJ. We appreciate them supplying this. Send your answer to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you might be next week's lucky winner. Well, that's going to do it tonight. Let's go around one more time. Oh, Val. Val is here with us. Okay, Val, what have you got for us tonight?
Not much. unfortunately, I had a guest scheduled to line up, and we haven't heard from him, so I'm kind of worried. But so I'm just going to talk a little bit about a couple of things. Coming up as far as contesting goes, not too much going on this weekend. There's some bumblebee thing going on. But next weekend, NAQPCW, August 4th and 5th. So make sure you get on the air for that. And then I'm heading off to Oklahoma City tomorrow. Jerry and I are going down there for Ham Holiday. If you want to pull that link up. Yeah, that's going to be this weekend in Oklahoma City. They usually have about 600 people, so it's a large event. I'm going to be the keynote speaker there Friday night at the banquet. Jerry's actually going to be giving one of the forum rooms talking about de-expedition. So that should be a lot of fun, and hopefully I get to meet a lot of you guys. Also coming up, we have a lot of conventions. W9DXCC is coming up, and W4DXCC coming up next in September. So rooms go really fast on those, the blocks of rooms they set aside. So if you're thinking about just starting to get into DXing, these are two great conventions. Hopefully one of them's close enough to you for a nice little road trip, and we'll see you at those. We're going to both of those as well. So that's all I've got, so I'm going to hand it to you, Amanda.
Thanks, Val. I hope you and Jerry have a wonderful trip to Oklahoma City, and good luck on your seminar there. I think that's going to be, you're the expected guest speaker. That's going to be a lot of fun. You guys don't want to miss that. All right. No, we don't have a lot of time here. So I'm just going to talk about what I did a little bit this weekend. I helped with Rally America, and I was in Rangeley, Colorado I was there for about 4 days. We did 2 days worth of rally stuff. I was net control 7 hours each day. I tell you what, I handled so much traffic, I felt like I was a Chicago urban dispatcher. I'm not even kidding you. It was nonstop talking, and I don't know how Val and Jerry do it for contesting, but I lost my voice Saturday night, and I finally got it back yesterday in time for flash flooding. So
voice key ears is the key.
Oh, well, you can't do that on a net control thing, but it was tough business. And I worked, you guys probably know him, he's a DXer, K8PJ, K8PGJ. He's out of Detroit. He's kind of a DXer. He's part of the PJ2T team as well. So had a lot of fun working with him. Okay, let's see. I have one question. I don't know who's left. Is it Don and George? You still here? Don and George. Yeah. And Val. Okay. This comes from Pierre. He says, the SWR on my IC7100 on 440 shows 1:1. Now, when he hooks up his MFJ862, it shows over 2:1 on 440. Which one should he believe? Is there normally an unreliability with SWR meters on this band? George, you want to take that?
I would rely on the rig. You know, it's what's going to be seeing the SWR anyway. When you add a SWR meter in there, you're adding in, and I didn't catch the number there. I assume that was a meter, but you're adding in a length of coax. So you're changing the position along the transmission line where the SWR is being read. You could probably change that length of coax and come up with a different reading on the meter. So always trust your rig. You know, it's what's going to suffer if your SWR is too high.
Yeah, and I'm not familiar with that particular type of meter. Is that a VHF, UHF specific meter, or is he trying to read the UHF SWR on an HF SWR meter?
You know who we need to have here is Ray Novak. He happens to be an expert of both things. To have worked with MFJ for a long time, and now with ICOM, he would know everything.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that particular meter, so...
Yeah, if we could just go ahead and dial him back. No, I'm kidding.
What's the number of the meter?
Stand by. Let's
George
see.
It
was MFJ
862. 862. Okay. I'm not sure what that is. George, if you want to look that up real quick. But yeah, I mean, if you're trying to, is it a VHF, a UHF meter? Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I would. I'm with George on this. I would lean towards the internal meter on the radio because, again, you've got to link the coax, and so you or someone has attached a couple of PL259 plugs to this short length of coax, and then so that's a variable right there. And now is it screwed in all the way good on the meter, on the coax on both ends of the meter? Is it screwed in all the way good? Is there any tarnishing on there? Is there some type of a compromised connection somewhere within that jumper?
Here's my big question is, if it was 1:1, why hook up this MFJ in the first place if it was working okay? That would be my question, is why would you need the tuner? Yeah. What do you think, George?
If it's working, use it.
Well, it was a meter, and you could use a meter. But and maybe we ought to talk about transmission lines again on one episode soon here. But when you've got a transmission line going out across there, if you were to measure the SWR at different points along that line, you would find out that it's constantly changing. It's like a sine wave. It's going up and down and just, you know, continues on like that. So your location along that transmission line is going to affect what the reflected power would be at that particular point. Yeah. But, if the rig's happy, everybody's happy.
Exactly.
I'm happy. All right. I'm always happy, though. Let's see. Let's go over some nets tonight. We've got 14,267 for the 20-meter net, not 268 tonight. And, you know, tell Steve thank you because he was just on the fire line on an 80,000-acre fire up there. And say thanks. Thanks for coming home and doing this for us. Also, I think we have the 40-meter net on 7192. Let's not forget all of our digital nets. We have Echo Link on Dewdrop In, 14 Charlie for D-Star. I know they've already got that up and running. And TAC 311 for the DMR net. Now, that's interesting about the DMR net is that TAC 311 happens to basically be what you would call a calling frequency. So they're going to be looking at moving that net. And I think that's a good idea. If that's been a calling channel, that they should definitely move it. So stay tuned for some changes on that. With that, that's all I've got. George, I know you're wrapping this up. Take it away.
Okay, Amanda, thanks for coming in here and bringing us that question. That's a good topic and probably one we ought to review here before too long. Don, before we go, any final words?
No, nothing off the top of my head. Just Man, I wish I was going to the Oklahoma City Ham Fest. I went to that one last year, and I was their keynote last year. So, Val, I know you're going to have a ton of fun. So say hello to all my home people down there. That's my hometown. I was born in Oklahoma City, grew up in Shawnee. So got a lot of friends back there. So be sure and say hello to all of them. I'm going to wish I was going this year.
Okay, Val, anything final?
Hey, I just wanted to also mention we just had our IARU. Let me go switch to this, see if it works. Hang on. Nah, they changed my screen around. I can't do it. I had a Skype update. Not happy. So we did over 7,000 QSOs in the IARU as NU1AW Portable 9. So that was a lot of fun. We had a lot of ops, and we didn't compete with the big boys over in Europe and stuff, but we did well. So that was really fun. So, and I can't wait to meet you guys all in Oklahoma City tomorrow or Friday.
All right, Val. Sounds like that's going to be a lot of fun. And don't forget what we mentioned earlier for those in the area. If you want to go to Nashville, well, go to the Middle Tennessee Ham Quest in Lebanon, Tennessee, and see Ted Randall and all the guys there from WTWW. They'll be broadcasting live. Well, that'll do it for this week. I believe Bob will be back with us next week. And, boy, I know what he has been up to this week. And let me just say, he is going to have an editing chore ahead of him with all the great footage that he has shot over the past week or so. But I know it's going to be some great stuff in there, and we're all going to learn something from it. 7-3, everyone, thanks for being here again. And we'll see you next week.